If you'll take your red pew Bibles one more time and turn to page 1001, 1001. We're reading, as we have been for much of this year, this calendar year, in the Gospel of Matthew. And today we're reading in chapter 18 at verse 15. Chapter 18 at verse 15. This is the lectionary reading for today. Jesus is speaking and he says, "If your brother sins against you, go and show him his fault, just between the two of you. If he listens to you, you have won your brother over. But if he will not listen, take one or two others along, so that every matter may be established by the testimony of two or three witnesses. If he refuses to listen to them, tell it to the church. And if he refuses to listen even to the church, treat him as you would a pagan or a tax collector. I tell you the truth, whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven, and whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven. Again, I tell you that if two of you on earth agree about anything you ask for, it will be done for you by my Father in heaven. For where two or three come together in my name, there am I with them." May God continue to bless to us this reading from his holy word. 2 days ago, I encountered a woman who was frazzled and frayed. Frazzled and frayed. She's a woman who is the mother of young children. And she had a child in the midst of a temper tantrum. And the child was just going on and on and on and was just out of control. And if those of you who are parents or grandparents, you know what this is like. I mean, the child was just, you know, irreconcilable. I mean, inconsolable and so forth. It was just going on and on. And I so appreciated the young woman because she was just about to pull her hair out. You know, she was at that point. And the whole situation was punching her buttons. Punching her buttons. Being able, in my situation, to be just a little bit more philosophical about the situation, a little bit more unemotional about it, I realized that part of what she was asking was this question: how then am I supposed to be in the midst of this situation? With all of this stuff going on and dealing with all the emotions that it's stirring up within me, how am I supposed to be in the midst of this situation? Some of you may be familiar with a show on National Public Radio called Car Talk. Car Talk. And the two hosts go under the name of Click and Clack. At one point, they received a letter, and I want to share that letter with you. The letter said this: "Dear guys, today I was involved in an accident. I was happily cruising along at the speed limit in the right lane when someone came up behind me. He was clearly very upset that I was doing just the speed limit, and he could not stand being unable to get around me because of a line of cars in the other lane. He began to follow me very closely." Y'all ever been there? Oh, you wrote the letter. Okay. We know these things, don't we? We know these things. He goes on in the letter. "Now, this situation activated some kind of psychological trigger for me, and I responded by tapping my brakes, causing him to swerve into the other lane. Fortunately, there was a gap in the line of cars there. He didn't stay there, though. He swerved back into my lane and followed me even more closely. I responded by applying my brakes gently, and he proceeded to hit my car 4 times. Before we came to a stop, I got out of the car and started yelling at him, and he reacted by leaving the scene. Now, legally, I know that the accident is entirely his fault. But ethically, I feel that I could have avoided the accident if I had not reacted in such a rash way. My question is, can you suggest an alternate, less self-destructive, but equally satisfying response other than hitting the brakes when I'm being tailgated? Signed, Cliff." So Click and Clack gave a response to that letter. All right? This was their response. You want something equally as satisfying as having him crash into your car four times and then take off? Well, you could drive into a tree to make him feel bad. Unfortunately, the only reasonable thing to do in that situation is ignore the guy, Cliff. That's difficult to do when somebody is being an unmitigated jerk. But if you're doing the speed limit and driving legally, that's the only good solution. Anything else is escalation. And as you realize, that makes you equally responsible for the results. He does one thing, you retaliate by doing something else, then he retaliates, and pretty soon nobody even remembers or cares who started it. It's very tempting to, quote, teach the other guy a lesson, but that's not your job. My brother tried that for years. When someone would tailgate him, he'd stop the car in the middle of the road, get out, walk around, and ask if there was a problem. After being punched in the nose five or six times, and paying off the vacation homes of several local plastic surgeons, he finally gave up and now leaves the lessons to the police. That's what you need to do, Cliff. When something like this happens, remember that people ultimately get what they deserve, even if it is not at that exact moment. If you're a nice person, good things will happen to you. If you're a jerk, the police will eventually pull you over. You'll get a $200 ticket, and your insurance rates will go up by $400 a year. So that was their response. But you know, the truth of the matter is, if we're really honest, sooner or later, every one of us has these moments. I mean, everybody encounters these times when things are just absolutely infuriating. And sometimes we feel like we're absolutely on the verge of being out of control. Often we feel that we're being set in upon by others, that somebody's using us in inappropriate ways or using us as a dumping ground or whatever. And given the fact that every one of us is going to encounter those moments, every one of us is going to encounter those moments, what then are we to do? What then are we to do? How are we to act when these moments arise? Well, it seems to me that our scripture passage, our second scripture passage, has something very significant to say to us. That there are some lessons to be learned. There is a lot in this passage that we just read, and there's no way that I can go into all of it. But I'm simply going to take the first lesson, the first verse, and the last verse of this second scripture lesson. And I'm going to look at those, and I'm simply inviting us to ask the question, when we encounter those moments that are so infuriating, how then are we to respond? I also want to say, I think what our challenge is to do is to get the spirit of what Christ is saying here. I don't think we're going to always find a step A, step B, step C, step D approach to this, but to hear the spirit that God is inviting us into in such times. So let me reread just the first verse of this lesson, just the first verse. Listen to this. If your brother sins against you, go and show him his fault, just between the two of you. If he listens to you, you have won your brother over. Now, one of the things that really sticks out to me is the call to respectful conduct. The call to respectful conduct. Hear the quiet response that is asked for. That you go and approach with dignity and with sensitivity and with respect that other person. We might be tempted more toward an emotion of rage and getting even, and I'm going to teach them a lesson. And sometimes in the short term, that can be very emotionally satisfying. I went to that person and I popped a cork. I popped a cork. But Christ calls us. Do you hear the spirit of this? Christ calls us in an entirely different approach. Christ calls us into quiet. and calm. Have you ever been in the midst of one of those infuriating moments? And have you ever found yourself responding with calm? And then maybe you went away and you said to yourself a day or two later, I'm really glad I handled it the way I did. I'm really glad that I kept myself under control. And I didn't say something that I'd have to look at later and say, oh God, why did I even say that? And conversely, have you ever had those moments when you did not stay under control? And you came away later and say, oh God, I wish I had handled it that way. Christ is speaking to us here. When we hit those moments and others are mistreating us, he says, in effect, if I can put my own understanding on this, he's saying, I want you to treat the other person respectfully. Part of the first verse is a statement of the goal. There's a goal there. I don't know if you caught it. And Christ's goal may not be your goal. You might be tempted in the moment to say, my goal is to teach so-and-so a lesson. But Christ's goal is, and the words are there, to win your brother over. To win your brother over. And that's an entirely different agenda. An entirely different agenda. I don't know if it's still abroad, and I could maybe take some of the younger people here and ask. In an earlier era, we used the phrase a win-win situation. I don't know if they still use those terms, but the idea behind a win-win situation was that both people left whatever the situation was being blessed and being strengthened and encouraged. And Christ is saying, listen, you're frustrated, and you go and you talk to your brother, your sister, and you hope that this is going to become a win-win situation. So that you come away feeling that they understand what you were saying and what your point and your frustration was, and they come away and they've learned something. They've maybe discovered that this conduct in which they engaged was not acceptable. Or in some cases, was even sin. Are you hearing the spirit of this? I hope you are. And I hope we're going to carry it forward. I want to go back to the first lesson that I read from 2 Corinthians chapter 5. Paul says, Christ has committed to us the work of reconciliation. Christ has passed on to us the work of reconciliation. We are asked to dedicate ourselves to bringing together persons. And I want to tell you that this Labor Day weekend in 2011, this may be some of the most important work you will do. This may be some of the most important work you will do to help people come together. Paul says it's been handed to you, passed on to you, to be about this work. And I want to invite each of you this weekend to give some thought as to where your work of reconciliation might apply. Where do people need to be brought into harmony with each other? Where do you need to be brought into harmony with somebody? I think that's part of the challenge of this text. And sometimes the work starts with very small things, very small things. Do some of you remember Tim Russert that was on TV, NBC commentator, Meet the Press, and so forth? I always was interested in whatever he had to say and his observations, and unfortunately he was taken from us much too early. But he wrote a book entitled Lessons of a Father and Son, where he explored the dimensions of the relationship between fathers and their offspring. And after the book had been out for a little while, he got a letter that he eventually shared. And a woman wrote back, and she said, she's talking about her relationship with her own father, and she said, when we were real young, I was real close to my father. She said, one of the things we loved to do was we'd get a bag of pistachio nuts, and she said, we'd open them up, and we'd crack them all open and eat the nuts, and then she said, we'd very carefully return all of the empty hulls back into the bag, and then we'd with much laughter, we'd put it back into the pantry and just wonder who's going to get into that bag and throw a fit because, you know, who put all these shells in here? And she said, that was a delight for her and her father. Well, when she hit later high school years and on into the rest of her life up to that point, she said she and her dad had a terrible falling out. And she said we got totally crosswise with each other, and we got to a point where we didn't even talk for years. She said, I reached a point where I thought, I don't want to end my life this way, and I don't want my dad to die this way. And she thought, I want to find some way to reach out to him. So she took a box, and she put a bag of pistachio nuts in that box and mailed it to him. And she was so delighted when a few days later a package arrived in the mail. And it was a package of pistachio nuts. All empty shells. All empty shells. And she said, that small act was the beginning of reconciliation. Christ says, the work of reconciliation is yours. That small act was the beginning of reconciliation between my father and myself. Well, if the opening verse of this text talks about the call to respectful encounter with other people, I want to commend to you the last verse of this text as well. Because what we read there is nothing less than this. If you engage in this kind of work, the power of God will be with you. Wherever two or more are gathered, Christ says, I will be there. I will be there. And when the call is to respectful encounter with another person, and the call is to move forward toward reconciliation, we do not have to do it alone. Because we have available to us, and that's what this last verse is talking about, we have available to us nothing less than the power of God. I want to close this morning with a magnificent story of reconciliation, and some of you will be familiar with this, and that's perfectly okay. Two of the founding fathers in our nation were John Adams and Thomas Jefferson. And I don't know how much you know or remember from history and all, but at one time they were friends. And then, of course, John Adams was president for a while. And eventually, Thomas Jefferson became elected to become president. And when Jefferson came to the White House to transfer power from John Adams, I guess they had words. And I don't remember, some of you may remember more of this story than I do, but they had terrible words. And there developed a huge schism between these two great men, John Adams and Thomas Jefferson. And for 11 years, they did not talk. For 11 years, they didn't talk. And then somebody came to visit John Adams, and somehow the subject of Thomas Jefferson came up, and Adams said this, I have always loved Jefferson, and I still love him. And a person went and reported this remark of Adams to Jefferson. And Jefferson asked this mutual friend to convey his, and the word that was used was, affections. Would you just tell him of my affections? That's the way they talked in those days. And what began then with one letter from one man to the other, and then a response of another letter, began what is considered some of the finest correspondence ever developed in the English language. As these men began to reestablish their friendship, and journeyed through the last years of their lives together with the blessing of each other's friendship. Eventually, of course, both men died. Did you know they died on the same day? And does anybody tell me what day it was? The 4th of July. 4th of July. What year? Anybody? I didn't expect it. 1826. 50 years to the day after the signing of the Declaration of Independence. Both of those men died on the same day. I mean, what are the odds? You know? And when John Adams died, enveloped in the friendship that had been reignited with his friend Thomas Jefferson, he said, at least Thomas Jefferson survives. And what he did not know, because the technology didn't exist in those days, was that a few hours before, Thomas Jefferson had died. What a blessing. What a blessing to those two men that somebody was about the work of reconciliation. And they listened to human spirits. And they listened for ways for people to communicate with each other with sensitivity and with tact. And I would say, not just a blessing to those two men, but to our nation as well. If they had never been reconciled, we'd have never had those letters. So today I hope that each of you carries forth, and I offer this as much from my heart as I do from my mind, what Jesus is talking about here. I know how frustrating life can be. And I know how much from within you there can be a belly full of anger and rage. I know that. But maybe we could remember what we've read today. The call to go in respectful quiet and to talk with an adversary and to work out the difficulties as best we can. To remember all the way along that the power of Jesus Christ undergirds us, and also to remember that that ministry of reconciliation has been handed on to us to be part of our labor. A little while ago, Steve and Matt brought a song, and when I heard it, I thought, oh my God, that's the message. That's the message. So I said to Steve, that's why I ran out. I think some of you in the back rows worried I left. But that's why, so I think maybe they're going to do a little part of that again.
Oh.
Our final hymn will be number 705. 705.